Welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is handling undelivered messages in WebSphere MQ7, dead letter queue, and poison messages. Today's presenter is Angel Rivera. Angel is a member of the WebSphere MQ support team for Unix and Windows platforms. He has experience with the JMS client of WebSphere MQ and WebSphere application server. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Angel.
Thank you, David. Hello, MQ fans. Thank you for attending this presentation on MQ. Next slide, please. A special Halloween edition. Oh, I need to practice a little bit my maniacal laughter. Tonight is Halloween. You are on duty for your technical support job. Before going to bed, you eat good stuff from the leftover candies that the kids do not take. Your tummy is full and you cannot sleep. And you start counting sheep jumping over a fence. A moment later, instead of sheep, you are imagining messages going from one queue manager to the other. Message one. Message two. A couple of hours later, you hear the dreaded sound of the beeper duty. Oh boy, no ghosts or goblins for you on Halloween, eh? Getting paged in the middle of the night is really a scary thing. Your mind is thinking to answer, "Hello, how may I help you?" But your body is lagging behind by 5 minutes, and when you open your mouth, you say, Then you hear, "Hey, we got a situation here." Suddenly, after midnight, Halloween, the messages that were flowing from one queue manager to another are disappearing. There are no errors on either queue manager. The application is sending the messages, but we cannot find the messages on the other queue manager. The messages are disappearing. It is like they are dropping dead. Then your eyes are wide open and you think, is this something related to the dead letter Q? Dun, dun, dun. You hang up the phone and you are recovering in your breath. I'm trying to calm down. Okay. And suddenly, again the phone. Ring. You answer and another coworker tells you, "Hey, we got a situation here with an application server. The MQJMS client is trying to get a message from a queue and then passes the message to a message-driven being, an MDB. The MDB is not processing it, and it rejects it. And the message goes back to the front of the queue. Then the message is read again, passed to the MDB, rejects it, and the message is back into the queue. And it is an infinite loop. It seems similar to when I tried to give a pill to my tomcat. Every time I put the pill in his mouth, the cat spits it out. Gee, he probably thinks that I'm trying to poison him." Then your eyes are wide open and you think, is this a case of a poison message? Dun, dun, dun. Next slide, please. In this presentation, I will talk about undeliverable messages. What are the types and how to handle them? As mentioned in the introduction, the types are dead letter queue and poison messages. The poison messages are a particular type which is most relevant when using a Java 2 Enterprise Edition application server, such as a WebSphere application server or WASP, using the JMS client provided by MQ. Next page, please. The undeliverable messages discussed in this presentation are those that are not delivered successfully by the queue manager. These messages are successfully placed in the queue inside a queue manager, but they cannot be delivered to the intended destination. In contrast, if the put-in application cannot put messages into the queue, such as when a queue is put inhibited or is full, then this type is not considered here. Next page, please. Notice the special format in this slide. It says notes, and the font is smaller. It has more text. And in some cases, I will read some of the contents of these slides. In some cases, I will just skip it. But there is more information here that you can read at your convenience. And an example of a scenario of messages that do not get into the queue manager and which I will not describe anymore is this. an MQ client application, such as MQS Put, which is a sample that puts a message into a queue, tries to put a message into a queue that does not exist, or a queue that is put inhibited, put disabled, or that the queue is full. It means that we cannot put messages in that queue. For example, there is an interaction there with MQS Put to the queue called 6 in queue manager verse 75. The sample starts, you enter the word test, and then when you type enter, there will be an error message. MQ Put ended with a recent code 272053, and the application ends. And you say, what is this 2053? Well, you have two choices. You can go to the MQ Information Center online and then search for 2053, or you can use the utility MQRC that is shipped with MQ, and you type MQRC space the code number 2053, and then you get a short description, MQRC underscore Q underscore full. I say, oh, that gives me an idea, Q full. Well, notice that the message was not accepted by the queue manager. You could argue that, hey, it is undeliverable message because my application had a message and I could not be delivered. Well, yeah, technically it is, but we are not going to cover those scenarios in this presentation. Let's go to the next page, please. This is page 6, and what are the types? As mentioned in the introduction, there are two types of undeliverable messages. The first one are messages that are placed in a dead letter queue. We're going to see all the details. Very gory details. And then we'll go to this other type is messages that cannot be delivered to the client application during a GET. In this case, poison messages. And we'll talk more about them. Let's go to next page, please. Page 7. About the cartoons. Well, the cartoons in this presentation were created by my son, Victor Rivera, who is an artist. I commissioned him this artwork that combines the theme of Halloween and MQ messages. The next two slides show artwork that he created for another presentation that I gave introducing MQ. And for these slides, he combined the theme of MQ and massage therapy. Why? Well, some PMRs have typographical errors referring to massage instead of message, such as the queue manager did not receive the massage. Well, the first time I read Sanchez's sentence, I thought, well, poor queue manager. Probably is getting grumpy because he didn't get his relaxing massage. Next page, please. This is page number 8, and this is what MQ is not. It is not massage queuing. Next page, please. For page number 9, outside IBM, I am a licensed massage therapist, and my son pointed out that in IBM, I am a massage therapist. And the caption says, I just feel so used. Next page, please. Page 10. Messages that fail to arrive to the final destination queue are placed in the dead letter queue, or the letter D, L, and Q. Now, it is placed there if the queue is defined. There is no default queue for the dead letter queue. The MQ administrator needs to define a dead letter queue. We provide a system.dead.letter.queue that you can use, but if you want to use another queue, you have to create it, and then you have to tell the queue manager that you want to use this newly created queue as your dead letter queue. Now, what is the handling of messages? If a message is, what happens when messages cannot be delivered, and there is no DLQ. If the message is not persistent, it is discarded. If the message is persistent, then the channel is stopped, but the message is not discarded. Okay? Let's go to the next page, please. Page 11. It is important to understand that the dead letter queue is a queue of dead letters or dead messages. Next page, please. And this is the baddest pun in this presentation. It is not a letter Q that is dead. Sorry. I couldn't resist it. Let's go to next page, please. Page 13. Let's study a typical scenario. And let's have a baseline in which the message is successfully transferred from one queue manager to another, and the message arrives fine to its destination. And it is important to really understand this situation. In that way, we'll see all the players, and then during a troubleshooting kind of guidelines, we'll cover each one of those steps and what we can do to check that everything is fine. We will, in a subsequent slide, there will be a graphic, and I will explain during that graphic, but for now, let me give you the overall presentation and the overall scenario. An application connects to a queue called QJ in Queue Manager 1 and puts a message. QJ in that queue manager is not a local queue, but rather is a remote queue definition that references another queue in the remote queue manager, Queue Manager 2. Then basically is the idea that we put in Queue Manager 1 and magically we want the message to be transferred to Queue Manager 2. The message is transmitted from the local queue in Queue Manager 1 to the transmission queue that goes to Queue Manager 2. And when the queue manager, the message arrives in Queue Manager 2, the message is successfully delivered to the queue QJ, and then an application can read it from there. Let's go to the next page, please, page 14. Now, the baseline scenario was copied from the following WSTE, Web Support Technical Exchange, a day in the life of a WebSphere in queue transmission queue. It provides detailed examples using the theme of Romeo and Juliet. Okay? This is slide 14, and the next slide 15 describes the steps on the graphic that is provided in slide 16. And I will describe these steps while showing the graphic. Next slide, please. Let's go to slide 15, please. These are the rest of the steps, and you can read them at your convenience. But I will explain the steps in slide 14 and slide 15 in the next one. Before moving to the next one, let me just point out to the bottom of this slide. Sometimes when I'm doing the testing between two queue managers, there are different steps and many commands to issue and so on. And I found that by having a template, it's easier for me to just prepare the template, fill in the data, and then do copy and paste in the different queue managers. And I wrote a tech note that has all the commands that you need to set up both way communications between two queue managers via sender and receiver channels, and also how to test that and confirm that everything is working fine. I found it very useful, and you are welcome to view that tech note and use it the next time that you want to communicate, to set up all the different objects to communicate from one queue manager to another. Let's go to page 16, please. Okay, let's describe the configuration. We have two machines, and each one has a queue manager. The machine on the right side has an application that gets messages from a queue called QJ, and that's the Juliet application. Now, let's go to the left side, and we have another host that has the queue manager. And what we have is an application, in this case called Romeo, that is putting a message into a queue called QJ. Okay, that's step number one. Now, the application has to do an MQ open, and the queue manager determines and says, oh, this is not a real local queue. It is just a remote queue definition, which means that there is a queue somewhere else, and I need to transfer that message to that somewhere else. Therefore, I need to invoke to put the message into a transmission queue. And that's the step number two, which is when the application puts the message, the queue manager cannot, there is no physical storage associated with the remote queue definition. But as soon as it kind of reaches the remote queue definition, actually the message continues and is placed in the transmission queue. This transmission queue, you can have several transmission queues, but this one has the name of the queue manager, which is one of the best practices. The transmission queue, if you have only one for a queue manager, should be the same name as the queue manager. In that way, it's easier to put it there. Then the step number three is this. There is something called a message channel agent that is going to read the message from the transmission queue. That's step number three. And then it will connect to the receiving message channel agent, another MCA, and the message will be transmitted. That's step number four. In this, then we go now into the right side of the slide. The MCA receives the message, and it's step number five. It says, oh, I need to put the message into the queue called QJ and puts the message there. And then the application called Juliet gets the message from there. Then this is the whole flow for a successful transmission of a queue from one queue manager to another queue manager. Let's go to page number 17. Now, let's explore what happens when the destination queue is full and there is no DLQ. The application connects to the queue. By the way, I found a typo here. It's Q1, but it should be QJ. I'm going to refresh this presentation and later and to correct the typo. Okay, eventually, again, all the steps are taken, and the message is sent to the receiving queue manager. The queue manager says, okay, I need to put it into queue called QJ, opens the QJ and says, uh-oh, it's already full. What should I do with this queue, with this message? I cannot send it back. I already have it here. Then what the queue manager will say is, okay, if we have a dead letter queue, I'll put it there. But if I don't, I need to check what is the message, if it's persistent or not. If it's persistent, it says, the answer is easy, I just discard the message. Bye-bye. If it's persistent, then it says, well, as definition persistent, I cannot lose it, okay? I cannot discard it. Then what happens is the MCA actually reestablished connection. Technically, it hasn't yet dropped the connection with the previous MCA and tells the MCA, hey, do not delete your backup copy of the message, in a sense, returning that message over there, and I'm going to close the channel. In that way, the message doesn't really technically leave the queue manager one on the left side because it's a persistent message. It cannot be discarded. And therefore, because there is no dead letter queue in the receiving end. Let's go to the next page, please. Page 18. Okay. Now, let's see again very quickly what happens when there is no dead letter queue and the message is non-persistent. Okay. Again, Romeo puts the message in QJ. The QJ says, I'm a remote queue definition, sent it to the transmission queue. The MCA in host queue manager 1 grabs the message, sends it to the MCA in queue manager 2. The queue manager 2, the MCA says, oh, let me put it. Oh, I cannot put it there. The message is non-persistent. I discard it. Okay, let's go to page 19. In page 19 is we define a dead letter queue. Those when the destination queue is full, the dead message is sent to the dead letter queue. Let's go to page 20, please. Let's repeat the scenario again. The message leaves the queue manager 1, is sent to queue manager 2. The MCA says, let me put it in the queue, QJ, oh, it's full. Let me check if I have a dead letter queue where I can put it. Yes, there is, and then it moves the message to that letter queue. Let's go to the next page, please, page 21. Now, at this point, we have a scenario in which we have a message in the dead letter queue. And you say, okay, well, let me take a look at the message. And you start looking at the message and says, well, I have no idea what to find out why the message was sent to the dead letter queue. There is nothing. If you're using the MQ Explorer, yes, there is a way that you can see it easier. But otherwise, if you're using another tool, it might not be that obvious what is the reason code for the reason why the message was sent to the dead letter queue, because it could be the queue could be full or put inhibited, a few other reasons, okay? Then what I have done, several years ago, I prepared a presentation called Browsing Message Fields, Properties, and Contents in MQ, and I copy several of the slides that deal with this topic of how to find out the reason code for which a message was sent to the dead letter queue. Then let's go on. That's the presentation with more details. Let's go to page 22, please. In this case, we are going to use a sample that is called S for sample, BCG for browse. I don't know exactly the other. Anyway, this is a very commonly used sample. It browses messages. And the browsing is practically a get, but it's non-destructive in the sense that the messages are not deleted from the queue. They are just browsed. Okay? If many people by default, when they create a queue manager or on purpose they say to the queue manager, I want to use the system dead letter queue as the DLQ, okay? Then in this case, what we need to do is invoke the MQSBCG sample using the system dead letter queue and queue manager name as shown at the bottom of the screen. Then let's go to page 23, please. And let me give you the scenario, okay? When you are using MQBSG, it will show each message. But let's suppose that we have only one message, and we have the message ID and several fields, and eventually you need to find out there is a line called format. And you will see that the value is called MQDead, okay? That's really important to look at it. Then let's go to page 24, please. Once you find that it's an MQDead format, then you will see the message contents. And actually, this is a little bit confusing because these lines are not part of the contents of the message, okay? It's just that we have, in MQ, we have, let's think about this. What we have is an envelope. Then the envelope contains the message descriptor, the message ID, and the format names, and all that stuff. When we open the envelope, then we put the contents, like a piece of paper that says test or my name or something. And then once we put that piece of paper inside the envelope, then we have a proper message. Now, when we put it into the dead letter queue, in a sense, we are adding a special label to the envelope, okay? The envelope is like a sticky note that will have format MQDead, and we have a few more fields of information. The content itself has not been touched. Okay, it's just an extra sticky on the envelope. Then this extra sticky on the envelope is called the dead letter handle, DLH. And it is an eye catcher. When you're using this tool, then if you go to the first line of the message, what it says message there, if you go all the way to the right, you will see that, the first column is the line number for the bytes in hexadecimal. And then the next bytes are just the hexadecimal for the pairs of the bytes. And on the right side, you will see the equivalent in displayable characters. Then you can see that the eye catcher is DLH. Those are the first three characters, okay? That will give you a visual hint. Oh, this is the place where I can have the information on the recent code for the dead letter queue. And then you go to the middle, and you will go to the fifth and sixth entries. I mean, those are actually bytes 9, 10, and 11, 9, 10, 11, 12, okay? And once you find them, another typo. It should be 9 to 12 bytes. Anyway, in this case, the bytes are 000000753, okay? Then that's a hexadecimal for this code. And at this point, you are scratching your hands as, oh, what is this? I mean, it's not obvious to me what is this. Tell me, help me. Okay, let's go to page 25. In page 25, what we can do is use the command NQRC to find out what is the short name. Then what we do when we are using hexadecimals is MQRC space 0x, which will say, hey, this is a hexadecimal number. And then we put exactly the number 00. I mean, it can be uppercase or lowercase, but you have to put all those strings there. In that way, at the bottom, you will see that it is the 2035 MQRC not authorized. That was a particular example that I got when I for that presentation. Let's go to page 26, please. Then the MQRC is very finicky regarding this hexadecimal. You could try different things, and they will not work. I just wanted to give you some a heads up. Page 27. The example that I showed you was used with platforms that are with AIX, HPUX, Solaris, and 64-bit. But when you're using Linux for Intel or for Windows, you need to do a swapping of the bytes, and this is confusing. And let's take a look again. This is another example, and we have different, again, we go into the byte 2 and bytes, and if we just read the numbers, it will be 2508000. And you say, okay, like we did in the previous one, I do MQRC, 0x, and those numbers, and the answer is no matching return comes. Huh? What is happening here? Let's go to page 28. In Windows and Linux for Intel, you need to swap the bytes and reverse order. And this is a little bit tricky. In a sense, if you have bytes 1, 2, 3, 4, the result should be 4, 3, 2, 1. And what I'm trying to represent is you go to the fourth byte, which is 0, 0, and then you start preparing in the left side. You go to the right side, and you say, okay, that will be the first byte. Then you go to the third byte on the left side, and on the right side will be the second byte. And then the 0, 8 will be, instead of being the second byte, will be the third byte. And the 25, instead of being the first byte, is the fourth byte. And now you have a different transpose number. And when you use MQRC, you will see that it is a 2085 unknown object name. Okay. And that's the case, for example, that you try to send a queue, the destination queue, instead of being Q6, it is Q7, and Q6 doesn't exist or something. Then you say, I don't know the object name. I'll put in the dead letter queue. Let's go to the next page, please. Page 29. The easiest way is to go to the Explorer, and then you say Browse Messages, and you select the queue and the right-click, and then you see select Browse Messages, and then you will see a special window that is called the Message Browser. Select the desired message and double-click. Let's go to page 30, please. And you will see, you have to go to the tab that is called Dead Letter Queue, Dead Letter Header, which is shown, this properties dialog has several tabs, general, report, context, identifier, segmentation, etc. Go to the Dead Letter Header, and then on the right side, you will see reason, the MQRC unknown object name. And you can do the reverse lookup in case, for example, you say, well, I know the short name, but I would like to have the code. Then you do MQRC and enter exactly that string, and you will see the 2085. Oh, okay. Just in case you needed to do further searches or something. Let's go to the next page, please. Page 31. Okay. Now that we have all that introduction, I would like to give you some guidelines, some suggestions on how to do some basic troubleshooting when the suspicion is that, hey, maybe a dead letter queue is involved here because messages are being sent from queue manager 1 to queue manager 2. And let's assume that this is the first time that this attempt is done, okay? Then we need to cover all the bases because let's suppose that, for example, the scenario was that you have an application that for hours has been successfully sending messages from one place to another, okay? Then suddenly the messages stop arriving, but the destination queue was able to receive messages before, but now it's not arriving. Then you can skip some of the first steps in this sequence that I'm going to show you, because the fact that messages have been transferred successfully indicates that the definitions and the initial configuration is fine. But I want to give you the complete set of steps, okay? Then the idea is this. You put successfully a message into a remote queue definition in Queue Manager 1, and you expect the message to be received in Queue Manager 2, but the message is not found in Queue Manager 2. Okay, how do we start? Okay, let's go to the next page, please, page 32. Let's just talk about the configuration for these scenarios, because I wanted to use, instead of saying remote queue manager and so on, because sometimes it's, okay, is this the local queue manager, is this the remote queue manager, where I am? Then I wanted to give names. In that way, you could easily say, okay, this is the context. I'm explicitly here, okay? Okay, as I mentioned in an earlier slide, it is set up the communication between the two queue managers. I use this tech note. And what I do is I created two queue managers in Windows. I created a queue manager called QMANG75. It's just the queue manager, the host is called Angelito, my name, and the version of NQ7502. But anyway, all these guidelines are for all versions of NQ. Nothing really special on the version. Okay, then I created a queue manager, just the plain CRT MQM, but I didn't specify anything, which means by default, this queue manager will not have a dead letter queue. The same command is being used for in Linux. I create something QMVert75, and I will do one more task in Windows. Let's go back to the Windows one. In QMEng75, I will create a remote queue definition that will call it Q6_Vert75, which points to the local Q6 in QMVert75 queue manager, in the Linux queue manager. The transmission queue, the name is the name of the remote queue manager, and at this time there is no DL queue. Now, let's go to the bottom part of the slide for the Linux queue manager. We created the queue manager, again, no dead letter queue, and we'll create a local queue that is called Q6, and we are going to explicitly say, put disable. It means it will not accept messages. And the whole idea was just, hey, I wanted to have a quick and easy way to move, to force messages to go to the dead letter queue. Let's go to page 33, please. Okay, again, at this time, there is no dead letter queue in the receiving queue manager, and we can do, just to enforce it, just alter. We can use the run MQSC command, and we specify alter queue manager, and then DEADQ, and then in between parentheses, quote unquote. And if we want to display, hey, are there any dead letter queues defined for this queue manager? We just do that display queue manager, dead queue, and we'll see that the value is empty. Then it means, again, it doesn't have a dead letter queue. Now, continuing with this slide, what we are doing is in the Windows machine, in the first queue manager, we are going to put a message into the remote queue definition, and we put something called test put inhibited, and everything is successful. Okay, there are no errors reported in this Windows queue manager. But when we look at the Linux queue manager, we see that the message didn't arrive. Okay, what should we do to troubleshoot? Let's go to the next page, please, 34. Now, what we need to do is this. Okay, let's start. Hey, let's take a look at the definition of the queue where we put the message. What we use is we do a display queue remote and the name of the queue, and we'll see that there is no queue depth attribute in the output, and it is because a remote queue definition does not have locally storage, a physical storage associated with it. And there will be some other attributes, but no physical storage. That's the reason it doesn't have a current depth. Now, the attributes that we need to look at are three. They are QM name, for the name of the remote queue manager. In this case, is the Linux queue manager, QMVert75. And our name is the queue, the remote queue, which is Q6. And the XMIT queue, it is the transmission queue, is the same name as the queue manager. Let's go to the next page, please, 35. And the step two says, okay, now that we find out that it is a transmission queue, let's take a look at to see if the transmission queue has messages in it. And what we issue is display queue local. The transmission queue is a local queue. The name of the transmission queue, and we specify the attribute current depth for current depth, and we notice that the value is zero, which indicates that there are no messages waiting to be transmitted. But because the previous message was put successfully, we can deduce that it was already sent to the other queue manager. Then, if in case that the court depth was 1, and we waited a little bit and it still is 1, then it will indicate that the sender channel is not working. Or maybe there could be several reasons. Then we have to take a look at the queue manager error logs and see why this channel is not working. Maybe the queue manager on the other side is down or something like that, okay? Now, the next step will be, okay, let's find, we have now a transmission queue. We know that the transmission queue is empty. Now, let's find out what is the associated channel. When we look at the name of the transmission queue, we don't have an idea of what is the channel associated with this transmission queue. Okay? Then let's go to page 36. Then what we need to do is we have to do a query of the channels. And you could do a brute force method of displaying all the channels and then take a look and find out which is the transmission queue. And if you have few, that's not a problem. But what happens if you have hundreds of channels? You may miss it. Then one of the things that you can do is exploit a very nice feature of RunMQAC, in which you can use a where clause. It's similar to the database when you use SQL statements, very similar. In this case, what we want to do is say, hey, show me the channels that have a value for the attribute xmeetQ that is equal to QM underscore vert 75, which is the name of the transmission queue. Then what we do, we got a head. In this case, it's called a channel that is QM eng75.QM vert 75. Now, given that channel, let's take a look to see if that sender channel is running, and we use the display channel command, and we provide the name of the channel, which is at the bottom of the slide 36. And we see that, we have a connection name. That is the name of veracruzrelating.com, 1450. That looks fine. And there is another field also called use DLQES, which is a default. And it means that, if there is a dead letter Q, use it. And let's go to page 37. And you say, but that command didn't give me the status to see if the channel is running. It gave me the configuration information, but nothing else. Well, we need to use another command. The command that we have to use is called display CH status for channel status. We provide the name, and then we'll see that there is a status running. Now we have a running channel. Let's go to the next page, please, page 38. Okay, at this point, we need to reach the conclusion that the message that was placed in the remote queue definition in the local queue manager in Windows was internally forwarded to the transmission queue and that the sender channel was able to send the message to the receiving queue manager in Linux. Okay, everything is fine from that point of view. Now, let's switch our attention to the receiving queue manager. And we log into the queue manager and let's take a look at the intended destination, which was the queue number 6. I say, okay, display queue local, queue 6, queue depth for current depth. That's the way you to find out how many messages are in the queue, and the value is 0. You were expecting a value of 1. Okay, then this is, something is not right, okay? But everything else that we did for the originating queue manager looks fine. Then we don't have to spend more time in that queue manager. Now let's concentrate on this remote queue manager. Okay, we were expecting the message in Q6, is not there. Where else can it go? Oh, let's go to the next page, page 39 with step number 6. And what we do is, okay, do we have a dead letter queue defined for this queue manager? Let's take a look at display queue manager DEAD queue, and it's empty. Oh, that field is empty, which means that there is no dead letter queue manager. And again, when dealing with non-persistent messages, if the message arrived to a queue manager, but if the message cannot be placed in the destination queue, and if there is no DLQ defined, the message is discarded. Okay? Let's go to page 40. Now, let's redo this scenario, but this time there is a difference. We are going to define a deadbeller queue in the destination queue manager. Now, this is a hint. When you use MQ Explorer, you will see when you are looking at queues and some other things that there will be like many system queues, system.admin.servercon and so on. And sometimes they take a lot of space. And there is a function in the MQ Explorer to say, hide those system queues. I don't want to see them. I want to see only the queues that I define, okay? And that's perfectly fine. Now, the thing is, when you do that, then if you use the system dead letter queue as your dead letter queue, you are not going, probably you will miss it. Then one suggestion is maybe you want to define a queue that is not called system dead letter queue as your dead letter queue. In this case, I'm using DLQ. Okay? Then I create a queue manager, CRTMM, minus U is the flag to indicate the following name is going to be my dead letter queue. But this is a caveat. This is just the name. It doesn't create the queue for you. Okay? Then in this case, hey, we want to use this DLQ. Then we use MQSC. We need to define the dead letter queue, and you can use define queue local DLQ like system dead letter queue. Poof, now you have it. Now you have to specify that recently defined queue as your DLQ for the queue manager, and you use alter queue manager dead letter queue DLQ. Now you have a dead letter queue in the queue manager. Page 41, please. Now, again, for the scenario, steps 0 to 5 from the previous scenario are done. It means the sending queue manager is fine. Now, let's concentrate on the queue manager that received the message. We display the step number 6 was, step number 6 was, hey, let's see if there is a dead letter queue. We use run MQC, say display queue manager dead letter queue. Yes, there is a name there. Good. Then we take the next step, is step 7, display the current depth of the DLQ. And by displaying the current depth, we see that the value is 1. Hey, a message arrived to the dead letter queue. Now we need to find out how to the reason why. Then we go to page 42. In page 42, then what we do is we issue that command, mqsbcg, DLQ, and we skip some of the lines, we look for format MQ dead. Got it. And then we go to the first line of the message that has the eye catcher of DLH on the left side, on the right side, sorry. And then we get the bytes of 0308000. But this was Linux Intel. Then we need to swap the bytes. And now we have MQRC, and the error code is 0000803, which means put inhibited. That gives us a good clue. Okay, then that's 42, page 42. Let's go to page 43, please. Now, okay, we are able to find the message. What should we do next? Okay, let it there to, just bury the message or discard it? Well, if we send a message, we want to use it, no? Then what we need to do is kind of resuscitate that message. And there is something called the dead letter queue handler. And by default, it's not it's not started. You need to start it, okay? And the next few slides we'll talk more about that. Let's go to page 44. In page 44, we have three references that have good description of the dead letter queue handle. And I want to summarize some of the instructions in the next slide, page 45, please. Okay. Now, we have identified a message in the dead letter queue. Now, this message has a special header format. It's called the MQ dead or DLH. But when we eventually want to move that message into the proper queue, then we don't want that extra header, okay? then what we can do is this. We have several options. One possibility could be, hey, we can change that Q6 to say put enabled, and then we can write a rule for the dead letter queue handle to say, hey, if you see a message in the dead letter queue that was destined to Q6, try it again, okay? Then when we run the dead letter queue, we will read it and then send it back to Q6. But in this scenario, I wanted to say, let's suppose that Q6, for some reason, we wanted to be path inhibited. Then what we can do is create another queue called Q7, and then we write a rule that, hey, anything that was destined for Q6, we want it to forward to Q7 in the same queue manager, and we do not want that message to have the header for the message, the dead letter queue. And in order to, that's the action that I described verbally is reflected down below here. Then what we need to do is we need to create a file that is called the rules table file. And in this case, one possibility is in Unix, you go to the /var/mqm. You can create a file called dlq.rules or something. I mean, there are no conventions on how this file name is named. Now, there are two lines. The first line means input QM and is empty. I mean, just space. And, well, no space, is null. And which means is that we are not predefining a queue manager. The same thing for the next attribute that is input queue. Which means that when we invoke the dead letter handle, we need to specify exactly which is the queue that we want to use and which is the queue manager. The second line is relatively easy to understand because what we do is if the destination queue is Q6, the action that we want to take, which is the second token, is forward. The third token is forward queue. To which queue are we going to forward? The answer is Q7. The fourth token is forward QM, and queue manager is empty, which means the same queue manager. And the last token is header no. Again, we don't want that header. We want it to be stripped. Then when we run the handler, then it should read that message that is in the dead letter queue. Because it has the destination of Q6, it should move it to Q7. Let's go to the next page, please, 46. Now, the runNQ DLQ is invoked as follows. You specify the name of the queue, the name of the queue manager, and you redirect the rules. And it will be in the background, but you will need, sorry, it will be in the foreground, sorry. Then you will need to terminate it with Control-Z, and then you will see this stop. But still, you have to really kill it because there is another lingering job in the foreground. You need to make sure that really scale. Let's go to page 47, please. Okay, and this is the summary. Okay, what we had it was the following. We have our destination queue was Q6, and it has zero messages. Q7, which is kind of the alternate destination, had zero. The dead letter queue had one message. Then we run the message, the dead letter queue handler, and after doing that, what we see is that the message was transferred to Q7. And I like the cartoon in which a doctor message is applying the electrical paddles to resuscitate the dead message. It shouts, clear, clear. Then the doctor says, it's alive, yes. Page 48, please. Okay, then let's go to the next type of undeliverable messages, and it is called a poison message. And it's one in which cannot be processed by the receiving application, and the message is returned back to the queue. For example, the application is expecting a specific format for the message, but is receiving a wrong format. Then it cannot handle this. Hey, I'm expecting things in French, and I'm receiving in Italian. Then I cannot continue. Or another thing is, oh, the message content is fine, the format is fine, but what I need to do is make an entry in the database. I try to connect to the database. Oh, the database is not running, and I wait, And I said, well, I have a timeout of 5 minutes, and it's already 6 minutes, and the database is not operational. Therefore, I cannot lose this message, and I'm going to reject the message. And it rejects the message, and it didn't process. It is doing a rollback of the transaction. That's the proper term. And the message is placed back in the original queue. And in the case of the database transaction, for example, that is timeout, sorry, then the MDB can, the application can wait a little bit, say, okay, after 5 minutes, let me try to read the message again. Ah, I read the message fine. Let me talk to the database. Oh, I got another timeout. Let me try again. Maybe by the third time, the database is up and running, and now the message continues. That's the reason there is this kind of processing. The NQGMS code is the one that is handling that. When it receives a rollback, it puts back the message into the originating queue. Then, and that's the reason it doesn't just move it right away into a dead letter queue or another queue, because it says, well, you may have a valid reason of why you want to retry the message several times. But there are some cases, for example, if there is a GROM format, it's really poison message, okay? Because it's going to be there in case of a GROM format, and if the application tries to read, it's going to be like the cat, speeding the pill, and just nothing working there. An infinite loop. And we don't want that infinite loop. Let's go to page 49, please. Okay. When using C-based NQ, the API, the application is responsible for handling the poison messages. We have encountered too many customers who do this, but what we see the poison messages in the JMS, and the NQ code for JMS, it handles for you the poison messages. Again, you need to provide a rollback in order to do that for the transaction. And this is accomplished by three fields. One is in the message, there is a field called the backout count. It's how many times the message was rejected. Okay? It starts with zero. When it's rejected the first time, the counter goes to one. If it's processed again but rejected, the counter goes to three. And so that's the backout count, how many times the message has been rejected. Now, the queue itself that has the message will have two attributes. By default, they are not enabled in a sense. The first one is called backout threshold of the reading queue. It means you define as an NQ administrator and say, I want the threshold to be 3 for this queue, I want the threshold to be 10 for this other, and so on. The default is 0, which means is how many times the message in that queue will be processed in case it's rejected. I'll explain it later on more. And the other attribute is called the backout queue name, which is, okay, if we identify that a message is a poison message, we need to move it out of the originating queue because otherwise the other messages could start accumulating and not being processed. We need to get it out. And where should I do it? Should we discard it? No, because there could be a good reason for having that message. Then we'll move it to a backout queue. And let's go to page 50. In page 50, again, the most common scenario is in a Java 2 Enterprise Edition, such as a WebSphere application server, and it uses the NQGMS client code. And I have two references here that explain really more detail. Now, in the rest of the slides, I'm going to give you kind of a summary of the processing. Let's go to page 51, please. Okay. Let's start with all the players. Okay. We have a JMS client working on the WAS, and he's been told, hey, get a message. Okay, then he goes to the queue, in the queue manager, and opens the queue, and at the time that he's opening, he's going to read, what is the backout threshold? In this case, it's zero. What is the backout queue? In this case, it's null. Okay, that JMS client keeps that information. Okay. And these are the commands that we can use in running QSC to find out what is the backout name and threshold. Go to page 52, please. Okay. The NQGMS client, after opening the queue, will read the message. It says, okay, I get a message, and the JMS client says, oh, let me take a look at the backout count field. And the field is zero. It says, let me check it to the backout threshold, which is zero. Okay, is zero greater than zero? No, it means that I can use it. Then the message you send to the message-driven bin, MDB, is the application running on the WAS. The MDB, for any reason, format, the database timeout, or whatever, for any reason, does a rollback and rejects the message. Page 53, please. Okay, because the MDB rejected the message, the MQGMS code puts back the message into the queue. The queue manager, upon receiving that rejected message, is going to increase the counter for bucket count from 0 to 1. And the message is put back into the queue. By default, it's going to be at the front of the queue. Then at the next get, that message that was rejected previously is the one that will be read. Okay, let's go to page 54. And the MQGMS client reads the message again, and it checks that the backup count, he says, what is your backup count? It's 1. Okay. Then let me check that field value with the backup threshold, which is 0. And he says, oh, backup count is 1. Threshold is 0. It means that I cannot continue processing these messages anymore. And at this point, the message is considered to be a poison message. Then it is not going to be returned to the queue. Now, let's go to the next page, 55. The MQGMS client will try to move the poison message from the originating queue into the queue specified by the backout queue, but it is null. Okay? Then the MQGMS client says, well, I cannot move the message because I don't have a destination queue. It's called a backout queue. What should I do? And I think the best option was, well, the GMS client will just terminate. And actually, there is the actual component in WAS is called the listener port or the activation specification. They, in turn, invoke the GMS client. The GMS client, again, will tell the listener port or the activation specification, there is a problem here with this queue. I cannot read the message. Well, I cannot process the message, and I cannot move it out. Therefore, terminate. And that's when it terminates. Then it is up to you now to see why the listener port terminated and try to move manually the message from one place to another or delete it or something. Well, there's a way to automate that. And what you can do is let's go to page 56. And the MQ and WAS administrators can customize the environment. In WAS, for example, we can say, hey, the number of retries for listener port, let's assume that is 5. The listener port or the activation specification, again, these two components are actually called the MQGMS client, and the value will be 5. It means they will give 5 attempts to deliver a poison message. If it cannot do, then they will terminate. Now, from the MQ perspective, we have to alter the queue and modify the backout threshold, let's say to 1, and a backout queue, which is a queue that needs to exist. Otherwise, it will be sent to the letter Q, and it will be called Q1 underscore BO, for example. Let's go to page 57, and there are a few more slides. Probably in 5 minutes we'll finish. Okay? Okay, now let's repeat the scenario. The MQGMS client reads the message, backout count 0. The field is less than backout threshold 1. The message is sent to the MDB. The MDB rejects it. The GMS client puts back the message, and the backout count is now 1. The retry counter for the listener port or the activation spec is incremented from 0 to 1. Let's go to page 58. The listener port or the GMS client checks if the retry counter, that the value is 1, is greater than the maximum retries field, which is 5. The answer is no. It's not greater. Then proceeds to handle the messages. The MQGMS client reads the message again. The backup count is 1. The field is equal to the backup threshold, which is 1. Let's go to page 59, please. 1 is greater than 1? No. Then the message is sent to the MDB. The MDB rejects it again. The MQGMS client puts back the message, and the backup count field is set to 2. And the retry counter for the listener port is incremented from 1 to 2. Let's go to page 60, please. The listener port checks if the retry counter, value 2, is greater than that maximum retries 5. No. And proceeds to handle the messages. Page 61, please. Now the MQGMS client reads the message again, checks the backup count, number 2. This field is greater than backup threshold 1. The message is not sent to the MDB. page 62. And the QM, the MQGMS client will delete the message from the reading queue, which is Q1, and it moves the message into the queue defined in the field name called BOQname, which is Q1 underscore BO. Resets the backup count field to zero, and resets the retry counter to zero from the LP or WAS. Let's go to page 63, please. Okay, and that's the end of my presentation. I have just two more slides. And as part of the MQ Halloween, we have the sometimes software developers have a little kind of a macabre sense of humor. And in the theme of MQ Halloween, we have some MQ scavenger threads, and there are these two vultures eating the innards of the message. Yummy. And then the bottom one is just we have hanging processes. I didn't see a little kind of suicide note for this one. Let's go to page 64. We have also zombie processes. I like this one because instead of brains is saying CPU. The last one is a demon process. We have demon processes in MQ. And my final slide is 65. This is just another cartoon as message therapist. Thank you very much, and I want to return back the control to David.
Thank you, Angel, for a great presentation. Slide 66 has some additional WebSphere product resources that we hope you would find useful. At this time, we would like to open the lines for questions.
At this time, I am showing no questions.
Thank you. We do have a couple of questions in the group chat, and the first one is, how can we tell if the message is persistent?
There is a field about when you are using MQSBG, there is a field about persistent, and it will tell you if it's persistent or not.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question, if the message is persistent and the receiving queue manager does not have a dead letter queue, it was told that channel will get stopped, but where will this message be present?
It will be stored in the transmission queue. And the sender channel is the one that will be stopped because the sender channel says, okay, it is a persistent message. I cannot lose it. And because I couldn't finish the complete transaction with the receiving queue manager for any reason, the queue manager, there was no dead letter queue and so on, then we cannot lose the message, and I'm going to stop. Then the sender channel stops, and the message is kept in the transmission queue.
All right, thank you. And then another question. Is backout only for WAS JMS apps? Can it be done for any Git program?
Well, the backout function is automated only with the MQJMS code. It could be a standalone JMS, or could be under WAS, or could be in other application server. If you are using the C API, there is no automation for the backout. You will need to process it.
All right, thank you. Okay, I don't see any more questions. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Angel, for presenting today.
Thank you, David.